I'm a plotter. I always sort of envision the scenes I'm going to write in advance. I never sort of make things up while I'm putting it on the paper. If I'm stuck in a story at some point, I step away from it and I sort of just let myself have a few nights because I feel like we do a lot of things subconsciously. And this story is in your head, your subconscious mind when you're sleeping could be fixing whatever's holding you back, or maybe you will just have some insight about what it is that is wrong about the story.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Cheng, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence. Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? You're listening to episode 66 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Cheng. We're officially in the month of the NaNoWriMo craze, and I've been having so much fun checking in with fellow NaNoWriMo participants on our Facebook group. If you want to join in on the shenanigans, head over to facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. I can't wait to hear how your NaNoWriMo days are going. Before we get into today's interview, I wanted to thank Vermont College of Fine Arts for sponsoring today's episode. They're the first low residency MFA program in the country to focus exclusively on writing for young readers. At the end of the show, you'll find out why they're ranked one of the best low residency writing programs in the country. I'm thrilled to introduce S.J. Kincaid on the show today. Her debut novel, Insignia, was shortlisted for the Waterstones Prize. Its sequels, Vortex and Catalyst, have received starred reviews from Kirkus Reviews and Booklist. In today's episode, SJ shares how-to writing tips on creating rich multi-layered worlds to enhance the plot, and she explains in detail how writers can create strong emotional tension in romantic scenes. We dive deep into her latest novel, The Diabolic, which just released this week, by the way. A huge congratulations to SJ on her book launch. She shares how she finds idea inspiration for her stories and why it's crucial to build on the ideas you feel most passionate about. SJ also advises how to avoid the dreaded second book syndrome, pulling from her own personal experiences writing her Insignia series. For NaNoWriMo participants, SJ has a special message for you. Now let's jump right in. SJ, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am so good. I'm so excited to have you on the show. I know you have a really special journey. I hear that you were a nurse. You were a hustler and really did your thing, went through the grind to get your book out there.
First off, thank you again for having me on. I did go to nursing school and actually got my first writing contract a week before graduating. So I actually never practiced as a nurse. I took my NCLEX, the test you need to take to become a nurse, as soon as I could after nursing school, because I'm like, I'm going to forget everything. And I did. So it's a good thing I took it quickly. I became a registered nurse, but never actually practiced. And after several years, I actually started to take refresher courses to go back again. And I hadn't sold a book after the Insignia trilogy for a while, right as I started getting to the hands-on component, which is the part of nursing I was never very good at, I sold Diabolic. So I'm like, this has to be some sort of sign.
Yeah, I mean, if that's not a sign, I don't know what is.
I was going to be a bad nurse. I mean, I love the patients, but there's so much attention to detail. It's not my strength.
That's insane that you're able to find that time. How many years do you have to study that?
In my case, I did a second degree program. It was for people who had already graduated college. You don't have to do a lot of the prerequisites that you would have already had in your regular college course. So essentially, you have to do a lot of science courses if you haven't done them within the last 5 years. And I was a history major, so I hadn't done any of the science. Chemistry, organic chemistry, physiology. I took those. And then the nursing program itself was a 13-month program. It's accelerated, so it's very intensive.
Can you give us an idea of how one of your weeks look like?
Let's see. Monday through Friday, I had class from 8 a.m. to about 5 p.m. And I would have 4 hours of one class and then 4 hours of a second class. And this was before clinical. So basically, like, I'd have physiology for 4 hours in the morning, which is an amazing, amazing teacher who made the human body just make total sense. And it was sort of the physiology specific, like, diseases. And then we'd have maybe a half day on Wednesday where we'd have a clinical. You know, it's funny, it was only 2010, and yet already sort of my memory of the exact structure was going. It sort of shifted every month. I didn't find it that difficult writing when I was in nursing school.
Are you serious?
It was like it used a different part of my brain.
Oh, so it was refreshing, if anything, for you.
Yeah. Actually,
oh, wow.
it came a lot harder after I was out of nursing school when all I was doing was writing to adjust to that.
Do you remember which of the novels you were writing during school?
I was writing Insignia. It was my 7th manuscript. I hadn't been published for the first 6. And Insignia was this big idea. I was like, man, if I could pull this off, it would be great. But if I can't, it's just going to fall apart. And I just needed to get the idea out. I had a maternal infant clinical and mental health during the summer. And since it was sort of a lower key 3 months than the rest of the time, that's when I wrote most of Insignia. Since I spent so much time when I should have been listening in class and I should have been perfecting my skills, I kind of had this story on my brain. It's kind of like, if I don't sell this 7th book, I'm going to put aside the writing thing, concentrate on being a nurse for 10 years or so until I'm just a pro at this, and then come back to it. And I sold Insignia. So
wow.
It worked out.
It was meant to be. That's insane. You know, I love that you mentioned that you wrote quite a few manuscripts before one of them finally sold, because a lot of our listeners are beginner writers. Many of them do have literary agents, but there are some that have written quite a few manuscripts and they feel very, very down and aren't really sure how to push past that and rewire their brain and realize, okay, there's another story in me.
Yeah.
And that's another new beginning. But to actually get from point A to point Z, they are not sure how to. What were you thinking when you're writing your 7th novel?
There are a couple things. I totally understand that frustration, because by Insignia, that was my 3rd agent. I'd had 2 agents who'd rep books that hadn't sold, and then they didn't serve for one reason or another. That relationship with the agents didn't work out. And a lot of people think when they first get an agent, hey, I'm set. No, that's just the first step. But it's a great first step. I did get discouraged a lot. I had one manuscript way before Insignia. It was probably the 3rd one that I completed. And I loved that story. I was so obsessed with that story. I really thought it was just the most imaginative, the greatest book I'd ever write. I just kept rewriting it and rewriting it to improve it. And I got an agent for it, and she couldn't sell it anywhere. I was so dejected by not having sold that one. I got this idea in my head that I just had to sell a different story. And then as a published writer, it'd be so easy to sell a book once I was already pubbed, right? I wrote 3 more manuscripts and I couldn't get an agent with any of those. So that was number 3, 4, and 5. I guess it was number 2 that I really loved. I considered giving up quite a lot. There were a couple things that happened. First off, I did not find a job that I really loved, which is part of the reason I was in nursing school. I didn't find something that was a career that could really occupy my mental energy. So I had this drive to find something else. And writing was the hobby that I really thought that I loved. So I kept pursuing that just even when I was discouraged, partly because there wasn't an alternative readily available. The other reason that I didn't give up is I read a post by Jay Asher on a message board where he had posted, it was the Verla K Blue Boards, and he'd posted, I'm giving up, I'm done with this, before he was able to sell. And then he sold, and 13 Reasons Why, we know how that went. And seeing that post was something I went back to every so often just to reassure myself. I will never be able to say something like this, like, hey, look, I succeeded after all this time, unless I just keep trying. So I kept writing. And funny thing is, after I sold Insignia, I looked back at that manuscript number 2, the one I'd loved so much, and written the next 3 books just hoping to sell as a published author. And it really was not a very good book. And I'm so grateful that one didn't sell. I would be embarrassed if that was in print of my name.
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't that bad.
It had some things going for it, but no, it had a lot of the things I thought were so original, where I've ended up reading in like 30 things since then. My writing's improved a lot. I guess writing 5 manuscripts after that really improved things.
Sorry, I'm interrupting, but you are very inspiring.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
Truly, when I heard your story about how you got to where you are today, I was like, oh, dang, you are what I want the heart of my show to be about, which is determination. You shouldn't let anything stop you. And really just listen to that intuition inside of you and just do whatever it takes to get it done. And my gosh, I have goosebumps listening to your story.
That is so awesome of you to say. I just know that hearing about other other people struggling, it really did help me when I was on the road to get here. And you know, the thing about writing is, even once you get published, it's not something, unless you basically are J.K. Rowling, I don't think you ever reach a point where you're just comfortable and you don't really have to prove anything. And maybe that's a good thing because it keeps us turning out the best possible work we can do. After I sold Insignia, I wrote 2 more manuscripts that did not sell. As I mentioned, I went back to a nursing refresher course because I wasn't sure if my career was already over. But the thing is, The Diabolic was better than any of those manuscripts I wrote between that and Insignia. So I think it's so natural. Writing is a job where a lot of people love it. Yes. Anytime you have a profession where it's like journalism or acting or anything, there can be a lot of extremely talented people who are also trying to do the same thing you are. And for some reason, someone has to buy you and not those people. And a lot of that's timing and luck, and it's not all dependent upon yourself. But the only way to ensure you don't really like, you aren't the one who gets that next shot, is just to stop going for it.
Throughout your whole time writing all these manuscripts, and like you mentioned, you're improving each manuscript, and you could tell that your writing has been improving. Were you also taking writing courses on the side, whether it's workshops online, just to try to squeeze in with your already crazy packed schedule? Or is this something that was more self-taught and you were maybe reading more of those writing craft books?
I did used to read a bunch of writing craft books. And so I think that sort of helped me absorb some tips here and there. Especially if you read a lot, you write a lot. I mean, usually there are only things here or there, but you know, there's always generally something helpful. I used to really like, there was a book by Donald Math. He really just sort of goes into crafting a story structurally. And I found that pretty interesting. I think it's really great to have someone who can be a great beta reader. My sister is also a writer, and we read each other's work.
Really?
And
that's,
she writes under the pen name Meredith Duran, and she writes romance.
Oh my gosh. So, is she older or younger?
She's 4 years older.
That's amazing. Did you guys get the writing bug from each other, or it was kind of your own separate paths?
I definitely got the writing bug from her. My sister, she knew from a very, very young age that she wanted to be a novelist, specifically that she wanted to write romance novels. And I used to sort of do everything she did. She's a big sister. I wanted to be just like her. I started writing very young, probably first grade or so, just because I was trying to be like Meredith. So, you know, so that's how it sort of became my hobby in the first place.
I'm assuming that you're from a very supportive family then, to have daughters become authors in the end?
Yeah, my parents always encouraged us to not be complacent. If there's something that you're aiming for, then aim for it. You know, it's funny, I always loved writing, but I always dismissed it even until I was out of college. I sort of dismissed the idea of writing because I was like, oh, it doesn't pay anything. I mean, no one can really do writing a day job. And I thought being an astronaut was realistic and not writing. Alas, it is the other way around. I always had this awareness that I should get a day job. And actually, it's part of why I did nursing, because it was a job where I knew I'd be doing something good. And the patient care aspect, okay, not the actual procedures and keeping track of medications part, which actually keeps people alive. The patient care aspect, I really enjoyed. I was pretty good at that part. And nursing is a profession where you have an actual skill that's kind of sellable in most any economy, and you can do it 3 days a week. So I was like, okay, then I have 4 days a week to be a writer. And my sister, she was getting her PhD when she sold her book. So we both kind of pursued other things, and then we were lucky to get published on the sides.
I did see that you lived beside a haunted graveyard in Scotland. Wait, what?
It was this place called Greyfriars, and Greyfriars Kirkyard in Scotland, and it's reputed to be haunted. And I went and visited Edinburgh. It was my first trip out of the country right before college, because I took a year off to work, so my friend and I were able to travel for a few weeks. I just fell in love. And so when I had a chance to do a year abroad in college, I chose Edinburgh, and the dorm I happened to be in was right across from that same cemetery.
Oh my God.
And that was the year when I began writing more, when I knew I should be out experiencing Scotland and really immersing myself in this once-in-a-lifetime experience. I don't know. I kind of blame it partly on the graveyard.
So the graveyard was basically the catalyst for getting you to actually start writing and taking it a little bit more seriously.
Yes, I started writing more.
That's so...
But it really wasn't until I was out of college that I started actually pursuing writing, and that was mostly due to the career prospect thing.
That is so fascinating. Did you see any things happening yourself that was related to the graveyard? Any hauntings or any supernatural stuff?
I'm so bummed about. I have never seen anything ghost-like or ghostly.
I would freak the hell out. I'd be like, take me home.
I don't know. I thought it would be so cool, but I didn't. But my friend, we were in the cemetery, and then there's a part where they have you in the black mausoleum. And so this graveyard has this history. They had bodies buried five deep, and something like one out of five of the coffins, when they took them out, they had these scratch marks.
What?
The lid. They couldn't tell if people were dead for sure back then, or just like in a deep coma.
Oh my god.
They also had those body snatcher guys. They had terrible fires. Edinburgh had terrible history. At one point, some English king, he tortured all these covenanters there. So it was a really deep stuff that had happened there. And so basically the haunted mausoleum was supposed to be sort of the focal point of all this dark stuff that had happened. And so as he was telling us about this, I was with my friend and several other people, very dark in the mausoleum. No one was behind us. And she's like, "Shall I stop that?" I'm like, "What?" And she thought I was poking her back to creep her out. And I was like, "I'm not doing that." And no one was behind her. And then we got out. She had a scratch on her back.
What the are you serious right now? Oh, hell, no.
It happened. It did not happen to me.
Oh my gosh. But you were there.
I was there. I was the one accused of that. So.
Exactly. I don't know how you're so brave to be like, "Yeah, oh, bummer. I didn't see anything." I would be like, "Oh my gosh, I want to go home right away."
If I saw one, I'd probably freak out. But I think it's because I've not seen a ghost. I've not seen a UFO. I would be glad to see either, because they would expand what I perceive as realities.
Thank you for sharing that story with us, because I think that's fascinating. And now with your stories, you are able to pump out a lot of manuscripts, a lot of different story ideas. So what is your process like with finding inspiration or forming these ideas?
I basically try to write them down. I have a bunch of notepad files on my computer, which are just like one sentence of an idea in short. The funny thing is about ideas, I will come up with something that I think is marketable. I can't really act on it. I swear so often I end up seeing a book that's like on Publisher's Marketplace, same premise within the same amount of time. It's like kind of like people come up with the same idea at different times, but if someone's acted on it first, then I just sort of delete that file. Even if it might be completely different, I try to keep my files for future reference. I start a lot of stories that I do not finish. I have a lot of things that are 20,000, 30,000 words that I will never go back to because I just run out of steam. With The Diabolic, I had one page. I didn't even know what the story really was going to be. And I don't even remember writing this part. I just kept coming back to it because there was just something interesting about it to me. And it was where my main character, Nemesis, is meeting a girl named Sidonia for the first time. And she notes that Sidonia is small and she's a nose that had never been broken. And Nemesis notes, "So this is what a real girl looks like." And I'm pretty sure that's pretty much still in the story. I kept going back to that and I was like, "Who is that character?" Something was so interesting about it to me. And I had another idea. I loved this BBC miniseries called I, Claudius. It's sort of about the ancient Roman crazy royal family. I wanted to write a story, a YA I, Claudius, but the thing is I kept envisioning a boy as sort of the one born into this murderous royal family. I just finished the Insignia trilogy, all about a boy. So I put that aside. And then one day I sort of connected the idea, I know that boy will be a secondary character in the story of Nemesis, whatever I do with her. And as soon as I thought of that, I just started writing a bit. I just stayed powered up through the whole thing. I mean, that's pretty much how it is. The difference between the story I finish and when I just sort of leave it 30,000 words is 30,000 words, I just sort of lose any interest in it. And I don't sort of come up with ideas for what's going to be down the road. With the stories I like, I think up some big scenes. They just come to me for later on in the story and I can't wait to get to those. So it ended up finished.
That's really cool. So now I do know that there are a lot of listeners that have written in mentioning being stuck in the very first phase of their draft. And I feel like you would be probably the spot on person to ask about this for that specific advice. And a lot of them feel like, okay, they're doing their first draft, but there's dead spots throughout. But there's also parts that are beautiful and the voices are strong, but it doesn't seem consistent. There's also others which are in the same vein where they are very, very frozen with the first draft because they're not sure how to take it to the next step for revisions. Hearing that, and from your own experiences, from all your manuscripts that you've written, what can you say about that, or what would your input be?
It really depends. Everyone has a different idea of what works for them. A lot of people just power through any sort of writer's block. I find the best thing for me is to step away for a few days and then come back and consider it again with new eyes. I try never to sit down. I'm a plotter. I always sort of envision the scenes I'm going to write in advance. I never sort of make things up while I'm putting it on the paper. If I'm stuck in a story at some point, I step away from it and I sort of just let myself have a few nights because I feel like we do a lot of things subconsciously. And this story is in your head, your subconscious mind when you're sleeping could be fixing whatever's holding you back. Or maybe you will just have some insight about what it is that is wrong about the story. Maybe you have taken it in a direction you didn't plan to, or there could be something that you will see more clearly if you're just not right where you are right now mentally.
That's really great. And SJ, actually, before we go even further, could I have you please give us a snapshot of the world you created for Diabolik and Insignia?
I am a sci-fi writer, so both Diabolik and Insignia are set in the future. Insignia is set in the very near future, and it's a little down the road. And it sort of exaggerates a lot of things that are already going on now. It's when there is sort of a Cold War of sorts going on between Russia and China versus American India and then allied countries. And it's being waged with automated drones in space. And a boy is recruited into a program to help control those drones. And he finds out that the way people keep up with these machines when they're operating them is that when you become one of the operators, you get a computer installed in your head. So it's kind of a cyberpunk story, and it's in the very near future. And with the Diabolik, I really wanted to write a YA I Claudius. And I Claudius is all about the Roman imperial family. And based on a book by Richard Adams, I might be wrong about that. Diabolik is set thousands of years in the future, and it is way away from Earth. And basically, the elite live in space, and the rest of humanity, they're sort of on planets, and they're kind of dependent on the elites who possess all the technology. What I had in mind, especially with the Diabolik, is the idea that this is a future where, just as we're automating jobs now, and as things like that were once needed people, now do not need people, this is so far in the future that you pretty much have this completely autonomous everything that is necessary, the building of starships and maintaining them, the maintaining of machines that maintain them. Everything has pretty much evolved into such an autonomous system that people have the luxury of not necessarily knowing how any of it works. So there is also sort of a religion that has evolved that creates a taboo of the idea of having too much insight into machines. The technology sustains itself, so then people are free to just be superstitious, and that's the universe's conflict at the center of this story.
Wow. Okay, so you are definitely attracted towards writing multi-layered stories. And with all that being said, I need to know, how on earth do you not get sidetracked? You sound like you're very organized with your writing, because you did mention you're a plotter.
A lot of the stories, like Insignia, had one setting as the pentagonal spire. With the Diabolik, the main setting is the Chrysanthemum, which is 2,000 interlinked starships, and it's the center of this empire. I don't plot as in line by line, but I have major scenes, and I really like to have a setting in mind. As soon as I think of a setting, a lot of the story ends up evolving from that, and a lot of the universe. Even though I sort of write in a linear fashion, I will go back and change things and make things consistent if I have an idea that's come to mind, or if a new question comes up in my mind that I need to address. There is a really fine balance between world building and getting bogged down. I think one of the flaws of my very first published book, Insignia. I loved writing that book, but I definitely did a little too much info dumping. I tried doing it through a school lecture or something like that, just to be like, okay, this is the world. All right, got that over with. But the thing is, that loses readers. So it's really a fine balance. On the other hand, my brain has to thought out this world in order for me to be able to write it, in order for me to put these people here. So they're not just against some blank wall as all this stuff is taking place.
Just thinking about the settings and the plots. Is there a lot of research you have to do that goes with your stories?
With Insignia, I'll start off. I was writing that while I was in my mental health rotation in nursing school. So I was thinking about the brain a lot. So a lot of things that seemed like they needed to be researched and that I would need to research if I wrote it now. At the time, I just knew it because I was learning it in class.
Okay, gotcha.
A lot of military stuff with Insignia. I made them civilians so I could avoid the fact that I have never served in the military and therefore do not have the insight to write something set in the military. A lot of that stuff I needed to research. With the diabolic, several of the sort of space, basic physics stuff, I did have to research some, but there were things I was able to avoid with the diabolic because it's from the point of view of Nemesis, who does not understand these things. And the people around her, just because of the religious issue, they do not know how their technology works. Their ancestors built it hundreds of years ago, and they're just still using it. What your character knows or does not know kind of lets you skirt some of the issues.
What was your hardest or most challenging scene to write with your book?
There were definitely some parts that were very hard to write. The main thing that I did in the diabolic that I've never done before, or at least never done well, is it has a romantic relationship that's pretty central to the story. And in Insignia, I mean, it's from the point of view of a 14-year-old boy from the beginning, and then his girlfriend's person is across the world and for a variety of circumstances. They sort of are peripheral to each other's lives in a lot of ways. With the diabolic, I was in this situation where I'd originally started the idea I had in mind for this story was going to be about the guy. And I didn't want to write that story, so I started writing about Nemesis. But I was still interested in his character. And so when I thought of the idea of them being romantically involved, it was interesting. This is the first time I've actually wanted to write a romantic relationship because I guess I was missing the key thing when I was looking at other manuscripts. I think in order to write a good romance, you have to be very interested in both characters. In my unpublished manuscripts, I added a love interest just because it felt obligatory or it felt like insert person in this position. In this case, I really was interested in both characters. I was very engaged with how they develop and how they'd interact with each other. However, when it comes to actually writing a romance, I have a secret weapon in that my sister writes romance and she's an excellent romance writer. So as soon as I was done, she's like, yeah, you have to run this by me. And so I was like, oh, please help me. And so you know, there were times when I had descriptions of kissing and stuff and she'd be like, this is kind of grotesque. And she also just gave me a lot of advice. For example, she had read the story and she's like, well, you know what you need? You need them to meet sooner. In this story, I don't know what form it should take, but he should see something in her no one else sees in her, and she should see something in him that no one else sees in him. I came up with an idea for that scene, and it worked beautifully, and it was great. It was because she just had a sense that that was missing. That was a tricky element to write in the story for me, but I did have this wonderful expert.
Yes.
It helped me with that. There came a scene where it's kind of the culmination of the development of these two characters and their relationship with each other. I struggled with that a bit, in part because his characterization took different forms over time. Originally, he was a bit more of a villain, I'd say. He'd done some things that were pretty much downright repugnant. And I decided to not have that, the original ending I anticipated, alter it. And so he became more of an ambiguous, sort of shady character who, you know, but he also does some pretty bad stuff. It's a little more manipulative. So the culmination of their romance had that aspect of his character. And that's the point where the book was sent out and sold. And then my editor, he had a couple of things that he wanted changed. And one thing was, you know, he seems kind of like a jerk right here. He should not do this. And I was like, but you know, that's part of his character, is that he's a really manipulative person. And then as soon as I sort of started changing him being a jerk in a couple points, for example, there's a point where some people he killed that he does not kill. But as soon as I changed that, it kind of had to change my conception of him. And I'm actually so glad that it happened because I actually like his character unreservedly now, whereas before I was kind of like, I enjoyed his character because he was kind of the slightly bad person. As soon as I sort of rethought of him, several of their scenes had to change. Several things about their dynamic had to change, which was actually a lot better. That's another element that sort of brought a bit of struggle to writing the plot, to writing certain critical scenes.
Through all of that, how do you think you've evolved creatively? Because it seems like you're really good at adapting and changing and making improvements and always wanting to push at your craft.
After I sold Insignia, there's something, it's called second book syndrome. And it happens when a writer first has to write a book under contract. Mm. When I started writing Vortex, there is this big transformation. I mean, Insignia, as I told you, I'd been writing that on the side while I was in nursing school. Insignia was the fun. Nursing school is the work. And as soon as you get a writing contract, there's always that question, and so many people will speak of this, where you wonder, what if that was just this aberration? What if that was a really great thing that I'm meant to do, and I can't do it again? Or they're going to see that my writing's actually crap once they've seen the next thing.
Is it more like that imposter syndrome as well?
Yes. So made it psychologically a little more difficult to write. The thing that cured me of that was not being able to sell a book for a while after the Insignia series. In a way, it was sort of the worst case scenario, in a way. Not being able to sell a book. It's kind of embarrassing after you've been published, right? Since I couldn't sell a book for a while, I realized that I enjoyed writing. I actually do love what I'm doing. So I just found inspiration again, I guess. Started writing only when I wanted to write. So I took my time with The Diabolic because I wasn't forcing anything out. I wasn't rushing through anything to get a manuscript shopped. And I was also starting to pursue nursing again, so I'd have that as a career and then this could be on the side. I try to always keep that in mind when I start falling into the sort of psychological traps. I try to remember. I try to remind myself. I love this. I do love it. Once you remember that, that's most of the battle right there.
Thank you for that. I feel like a lot of listeners can definitely resonate with that feeling of the imposter syndrome and the second book syndrome. I'm going to have to borrow that from now on. I think that's brilliant. Could you bring us through the most difficult time in your career that you felt really stuck?
It was probably before Insignia even came out, when I was trying to write Vortex. On one hand, there was the whole imposter syndrome thing, but also I had worked so long to get published that it's like achieving a goal that you have set out to do and you've worked for so long. It's really tricky afterwards because suddenly, what are you working towards? It's kind of difficult in a way to achieve something you've dreamed of for so long because you don't have that dream anymore driving you forward. You've gotten there, you got it, and it's awesome. But then what next? That was happening. And I was not going to be a nurse now. And I was trying to adjust to life the way it was going to be. You know what? Anytime you're a new writer, newly published writer, you don't have any contacts in publishing. You don't know any bloggers. You don't know any booksellers or librarians. You're very much out at sea at the beginning. You kind of have to feel your way in and sort of get to know everything. I would say that was definitely the hardest time. And that was probably like early to mid 2012 for a while with Vortex. It was crazy because I had written 92,000 words and it was not working. I got rid of it all and started over. I had to do it because I was kind of stuck mentally in this thing where I kept rewriting over and over. I was actually even staying up like every other day for a while to work on this story all night. And it was just like, you can't do that. You cannot. Before Vortex, I used to always reread constantly everything I'd written. I mean, this is just my habit. And I burned out that capacity while I was writing Vortex. It's something I can only do occasionally, which, you know, I probably missed details that I used to just sort of know extremely intimately every little bit of my story that I'd done so far. And now I don't have that quite anymore, but you know what? It's for the best. You need some distance mentally. That was the hardest time. It wasn't until writing Catalyst that it kind of became easier again, because on one hand, writing a second book in itself is hard because you have to have everything that you set up in the first book and continue it into the third book. It's tricky. You're not introducing people to this brand new world and new characters. You have to have them remind them who the characters are. I want to just plot people back in the story because I knew it would have been a year since they'd read these people. So there's a lot of technical stuff. The great thing about having been that sort of obsessive around the time I was writing that second book is by the time I actually started writing my third book, I had the entire plot already in mind because I'd spent so much time obsessing over where the story was.
There we go. There's a silver lining, right? You did mention something that was very interesting for me is that when you have a series, there's so many technical aspects, exactly as you were saying. And it's true, like, oh, it's been a year since the book came out. So are these notes that you write, let's say you just finished part one, so you write these little notes to remind yourself, bring it back up in part two as a friendly reminder for readers?
I think it depends on what type of series you want to write. I wanted to write a series where someone could pick up the second or third book, even if they hadn't read the books before that, and be a little confused, but get into the story. But if you really want sort of a fast-paced series that's just like sort of rockets you along, sometimes you just won't want to do that. And you just want to, and especially if it's sort of aimed at older teenagers, you kind of just want to trust them to get themselves caught up on what happened last when they read the previous book. It depends on what approach you want to take to the series. I think it's also because I have to know how things are going to end before I sort of write up to them, or else I get in trouble if I don't.
Let's just say you're just writing part one right now. You already know what's going to happen in part three then. That's how you work?
I know big scenes that would happen. Like the big culmination of character conflicts or character relationships. There were two characters in Insignia. One was named Tom Raines, one was James Blackburn, and their characters are kind of butt heads. Eventually, they have their whole arc, and I knew the last scene that they were going to have together, even though I didn't know how I was going to get there in book one. And that scene did happen, but it was, you know, towards the end of book three. It gives me direction for what I come up with in the time in between. That's how I have to do things. Some people are amazing pantsers, meaning they can just make things up as they go along. And I envy that skill, but I cannot do it. I think it would be easier. For example, before I sold Insignia, I was like, yeah, I want it to be a 5-book series. I just thought more books equals better. My agent pitched us 4 and Harper bought it as 3. And by the time I was writing number 3, I was like, oh, thank God it's only 3 because it's a lot.
I put myself in your shoes, or just anyone writing a series, and I'm like, oh gosh, I would feel drained. It's exciting and thrilling at the same time, but my goodness, it's a lot of energy, and it's just, and a lot of pressure, like we were just talking about before. The whole imposter syndrome, plus that pressure on top of that, is just, oh gosh.
What it gave me a perspective on was A Song of Ice and Fire. The 4th book wasn't out, so I was like, oh, well, by the time I come back from Scotland, it will be out. It was not. I look at that book, and I look at just number of characters and the complexity that he is grappling with. And it's something that once I had a series that I actually wrote, just my trilogy with my one viewpoint and but a certain number of characters who had sort of plot lines of their own. And I look at that, I'm like, oh my God, I could never, never do that. I'm in awe of the fact that he's able to interweave so many elements.
He's like a scientist in a way. I can't even imagine what his writing office or writing room looks like. It's probably filled with index cards all over the wall and the floor.
Have you ever seen it, Homeland?
Homeland, the TV show?
Yeah. There's this part where she's in this, and a manic episode has been sort of organizing all this different information to these streams of that make it coherent, and but it's only coherent to her, and other people can't really understand what they're looking at her. That's how I imagine it. It would just be something where it's like you're taking so much. If I had a series like that, I would just kill off the vast majority of the characters in some mass extinction event and be like, okay, I have 3 left. Let's see what they do.
Oh my gosh. And then there were dinosaurs that were thrown in there.
Asteroid hits. Boom.
Exactly.
Oh, I guess we just got Arya and Daenerys and Tyrion.
Love those characters. Ugh. What are you most excited about right now with your writing, especially because you are full-time? I'm sure there's lots of things in the works for you, but if there's anything that you can share with us and give us a glimpse or like a sneak peek, anything like that, we're very excited to hear.
Well, The Diabolic comes out on November 1st, and it's been amazing the whole process of selling The Diabolic, because when I wrote the story, I finally discovered that I loved writing, or rediscovered, I should say. And since I remembered that I loved writing, this was the first time I really enjoyed writing characters again. And Nemesis, the main character of The Diabolic, she is someone who's a very dangerous girl. She doesn't have much of a conscience. And when I was writing her, I had that part of my brain that was the side that puts pressure on me and worries about market and this and that. And, you know, I kept thinking, why are you wasting your time with this story? This main character is not someone readers will be able to relate to. I mean, she's too evil in a way. And I worried about that. And I was just like, oh, shut up. And just kept writing it. And
I like that you told yourself to shut up.
The most shocking thing was just the response to it from publishers and just that I've had so far. So next month, I'm going to Y'all Fest and Book Festival. And I don't know. It's exciting because it's just, everything has been a wonderful surprise with this book so far. I hope readers enjoy it. And it's going to be interesting to see what people think of it outside the publishing bubble.
I have a feeling you're going to have the most amazing time, so that's going to be awesome. Do you know about NaNoWriMo and have you had any experience with it?
Uh-huh. Yes, yes, yes. And that is why I always plan my endings.
This is my first time ever committing to NaNoWriMo, so I'm actually really excited but really freaking nervous at the same time because I don't really have an outline. I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to pull out the last thing I wrote like 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah?
Like 2 pages and then go from there. Do you have any parting advice that you can share with me and the listeners who are going to be doing NaNoWriMo this year? And if you'd like to share your experience too, that'd be awesome.
Started and never finished tons of stories before one day my friends and I sat down together and came up with an idea for a story, and we basically wrote it when we were hanging out. It was just a silly thing, but finishing that story, finishing that first manuscript is what made me realize, wow, this is possible. And once you know you can finish one, you can finish others. Having said that, right after that story, I read about NaNoWriMo. I was like, yeah, I can do that because I just finished my first manuscript. And so I sort of did it in August and I did it on my own, did 1,000 words a day, made it up as I went along. And I got to the end, had no idea how to end it. So I had the guy kill himself and it was terrible. It was really I'd submitted it to agents after, and woman started reading it, notified me halfway through. I love this. This is so great. And then at the end, I got a form rejection. So after she read that stupid ending. So I would say NaNoWriMo is a great tool, and I don't do the writing by word count anymore. What I do is I write by scene. I imagine the scenes beforehand, and I find they generally are much longer than I would have done if I'd set out to write 1,000 or 2,000 words. Mm-hmm. So that's a helpful workaround if the certain number of words per day isn't working for you. Because I feel like the danger of a certain number of words per day is sometimes you can just put words in there to meet your count for the day.
Very much quantity over quality.
Yes, yes. But that said, sometimes the most important thing about NaNoWriMo is finding out whether it works for you. And if it does, then use it. And seriously, just finish your first manuscript and you can do it, because all you have to do is just keep working at the one you're at, you're writing until you have reached that ending. And then you will realize it's easy. Yeah. You have it. You always have.
Thank you. Are there any resources that you've used when you did your own in August? Because I'm actually going through and looking for resources and tools that I can gather and put together in like a resource worksheet, almost like a cheat sheet for the listeners so that they can just go through and get some ideas. I know that there's some program out there that you can sign up for, and I think it's totally free. You could just press play and then you can control what sounds you want in the background, make it sound like a coffee shop if you don't have time to go to a coffee shop. I could write in silence, but I do feel like sometimes if I'm at different places, I can get work done even more.
When I write nowadays, I never do it from where I'm living. I do go to a coffee shop or something. And this is going to seem unrelated, but I remember when I was in nursing school, part of when someone is addicted to something, okay? A lot of times someone will use a drug in a certain place at one location. And so sometimes when people overdose, it's because they've been off the drug and then they just decide to use it again, but they're not in that same place, in that same mindset. Mm. And so they can't handle the same dosage. It's like your body primes you for something when you're in a setting that you associate with it. I think going to a place or even just having one spot or something that you devote to this writing that you're doing, that can be something that can form a situation where it sort of primes you to write. And so I think that could definitely be a helpful, that would assist with the process. But just going somewhere like Absolute Right, that's probably a pretty bad comparison. There are certain things where your mind associates a setting with an activity. If you go to Absolute Right and you find someone who's also doing it maybe, and sort of be accountable to each other for having written a certain number of words per day.
I think that's brilliant. It's true. Accountability goes a long, long way. So yes, absolutely.
Even though I told you that manuscript I turned out was terrible, that was also a hugely important thing because it did teach me I could produce things on command if I needed to. That's another really valuable thing about NaNoWriMo. And one more thing, something I really find with great with first drafts is I use something called an Alpha Smart. They're not even being made anymore, but you can buy them on like eBay and stuff. It only shows about 4 lines at a time, and all it is a word processor. I write everything I write for a day, I write on there, and then you put it on a computer, and there you edit it, avoiding the whole going back and reading and reading. Using something like that is helpful because you can't go on the internet on there, and it kind of avoids the whole, if you fall prey to relentless self-editing, which can be a problem, or I mean, it's just whatever works for you. That's really the essential thing, finding the tools that help you do what you're trying to do. And it's different for everyone.
SJ, you've been lovely. Thank you so much for giving
Thank
us
you,
so much
and
of your time.
Good luck.
Thank you. And I'm so excited for you, for all these trips coming up, travelings and meeting fans, and then also the people buying your books. That's so exciting. I feel adrenaline going through my blood right now for you. So I congratulate you.
Thank you. And thank you again for having me on. And you just finish your first and the rest are easy.
And that wraps up our episode with the incredibly sweet and generous SJ Kincaid. SJ, thank you for being so generous with our writing community. I so enjoy chatting with you. Storytellers, thank you, as always, for listening in and joining us. Please say hi to SJ on Twitter over at SJ Kincaid Books. SJ mentions a ton of really helpful resources and books in her episode, and they're all linked up in her show notes page. You can find it over at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/SJ Kincaid. Don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for a safe space to check in and have some fun while doing the NaNoWriMo Challenge. You can join in on our conversation over at facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. At the very top of the show, I mentioned Vermont College of Fine Arts. I know there's a lot of you who are really interested in writing books for children or young adults, so you'll definitely want to pay special attention to what Vermont College of Fine Arts has to offer. VCFA has 3 different graduate level programs for writers, and I'll be going into detail about their program called Writing for Children and Young Adults. Students meet up twice a year on their gorgeous campus in the heart of historic Montpelier in Vermont for intensive 10-day residencies. It's a lot like a 10-day retreat for writers, and you guys know how much I love retreats. Imagine attending VCFA's MFA program where you'll be immersed in an amazing writing community filled with intensive workshops, lectures, panel discussions, and readings that are always challenging and inspiring you. After the life-changing experiences at the residencies, you and the faculty will design your own course for the start of the semester by really zoning in on your specific writing goals. Throughout the semester, you'll continue working with faculty mentors through telephone conferences, emails, and letters. So basically, you're receiving one-on-one mentorship throughout your semester as you take control in shaping the kind of education you want out of your time with VCFA. Check out 88cupsoftea.com/VCFA for more info. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.